TGA Nation, we are back, and we are back in a big way with the U.S. Open heading to Pinehurst, and I am stoked. Now, before we get to that, big congratulations are in order. Spencer, with a dominant draft last week, came through and officially crowned a three-peat. Congrats, Spence. You have an acceptance speech for the fans.
Well, I appreciate the kind words in the shout out there, Joel. It was a good tournament from top to bottom. Like, DFS went well. The betting market ended up producing winning results. My only, I don't even want to say concern with the event because we're nitpicking a little bit here. But if Colin Morikawa could have caught Scottie Scheffler down the stretch, it would have been a very large event for me from both the DFS perspective and for betting with the outright ticket I had on him. So, I mean, if there's any reasons to still be hungry and trying to move forward into this, it's, I feel like something was left on the table last week with Colin. I think we might have lost Joel already, David.
First withdrawal of the tournament is again Joel withdrawing from his own team. Yeah, look, congrats, Spence, on the three-peat. Personally, I hate to see it, but very impressive run that you've been on, obviously, the last few weeks. And yeah, we've got to find a way to stop the freight train that is Spencer in these PGA Draftcasts as of late. But I see Joel's back, so he can take back.
I'm back, and Spencer, it is a freight train. I'm a little disappointed the audience and I teaming up couldn't take you down, but the audience is a complete disaster. I mean, you guys are completely in left field. First of all, you're making complaints in the chat. And now I'm going to start calling people individually out by name or making false accusations as you're claiming that I misled you and every pick that I made would have helped you. And you're still complaining. So example number one, if you will, you guys wanted Victor Hovland. I vetoed for Tony Finau, who finished ahead of Victor Hovland and was significantly cheaper. So you're welcome. And then example number two, you guys wanted Rory McIlroy. And I said, let's take Ludwig. And I was told, no, we want Rory. And Ludwig outplayed Rory. So while you're in the chat, let's just see who is complaining. Zach Jeffers, Japan, to be specific. Silent Assassin 313, also to be specific. I would like you guys to, if you don't believe me, look back at the show, check the tape, come back, and tell me what you've learned from last week that you're going to do this week and moving forward to improve on the poor decisions you've been making in the draft. Because otherwise, Spencer will just keep winning every week, and we're never going to get another win on the draft. So changes need to be made, audience. We love you guys. You carry the show, but you guys got to do better. David, how are you doing today?
I'm good. I mean, that was beautiful to listen to. That was fantastic. Not too bad. Unfortunately, I tested positive for COVID this morning, but hey, it's the US Open. Can't really opt out of this one. It's a massive tournament. As I said, though, I do need to find a way to stop Spence on this draft cast and what he's been doing with his drafts so far, the last 3 weeks. So obviously, Pinehurst number two, a spot of some historic New Zealand influences on this event. Obviously, Michael Campbell famously won in 2005. So I've got my Kia Kaha golf shirt on, which was the golf clothing brand that he collaborated on with all his golf clothes. I've got my Michael Campbell signed cap here and my Kiwi, obviously, as well, which is all good good vibes, I think, for the US Open this week to help me on the PGA Draftcast, because we're at that stage now where Spencer's won three times in a row that I need to look to, like, you know, to really just change things up and mix things up to try and get victory this week.
Once you've hit the three in a row, now it's all hands on deck. It's not even at this point that one of us need to win. Now we just need to not let Spencer keep winning. At this point, we just need to avoid a four-peat, and then we can move on from there. So the pressure is on here. We have to have a big night, a big draft, and there's no bigger week and bigger stakes to have that than the U.S. Open. I think there's going to be a lot of drama this week on the course. I love the field that we're getting. Even though Rahm is out, we're still getting a loaded field, which is going to make for a lot of excitement. But Pinehurst is an interesting challenge. And Spence, I am very curious to hear what you're looking for at Pinehurst this week. So let's understand what kind of golfer profile we're going to need in order to be competitive this week. So Spence, as you always do every week, you give the most in-depth course breakdown I've heard in the industry. I know this week we're going to need a great one especially. So tell us, what are you looking for?
Yeah, so designed by Donald Ross and restored twice over the past 50 years by Robert Trent Jones in 1974 and Bill Corr and Ben Crenshaw in 2010, much of what we saw from this property in 2014 when it hosted the U.S. Open should still be extremely relevant today. Ross, and this is something we talk about quite frequently when we go to Ross venues, but he's known for these diabolically unique around-the-green complexes that oftentimes veer away from your standard expectations of what we see on the PGA Tour weekly. That'll be no different here, since turtle shell greens have the propensity to repel shots entirely off the surface. Sometimes that can be up to 30 yards away from the hole. It can move into traps or other tight lies. All of that just adds to the headache of the construction of what Ross put into place originally and all the reconstructions that we've had done. That would be challenging enough on its own to try and traverse because of the complexity of the track. But then we also get what becomes an overabundance of shots from 175 plus yards with your irons into fiery fast greens that have not received too much rain in the area recently. Golfers are already talking about how balls aren't holding the surface on their second shot. Players are being forced to putt with three woods and all the other unique variations from off the surface to try to get their ball back into position to make par. Many of those explanations, and I'd be curious to hear what you guys looked into it because of this, but I thought many of those explanations pushed me into a direction where, and I want to very cautiously say this, and I'll talk about it in a second of exactly what I mean by it, but I went in the direction of weighing strokes gained approach ever so slightly less than usual. So my thought process was that if players are receiving a reduced GIR percentage from long distance, and that's with all that long iron play, we get this increase in projection for total driving and around the green performance. I don't want anyone to think that I'm talking about a more than a few percent decrease in that area. Although a lot of my approach metrics highlighted more of how someone combined certain portions of their game. So I wanted to see long iron proximity plus around the green data. I wanted to see how someone executed approaches from 175 plus yards. I looked into higher apex totals, players that could stop the ball on these greens. So this wasn't necessarily your prototypical, let's look at strokes gained approach. And that's not what I do any of these weeks to begin with. It's always a course specific outlook, but I even more so rolled into this mentality of let's just look over and over again from 175 plus yards, because that's where a lot of these shots are coming from. So that is where most of the approach weight ends up landing for me. It's 3% less in total strokes gained approach inside of 100% weight in the model. Not a massive difference, but when it's all coming from three or four different metrics, that's kind of how I tried to make this a little bit different. I think there's going to be unpredictable runouts when you do get a driver in hand. The fast and firm conditions are going to naturally move shots in the sandy areas. They have wire grass, is what they call it, gorse bushes. I leaned a little bit of accuracy over distance. I would say this is a standard U.S. Open test that you're going to get yearly, where the one who ends up winning this tournament is probably the one who adds the longest and straightest drives of the week. But there's an ability to be accurate or be good with your long iron play or be good with your short game to where you might not be able to beat Scottie Scheffler by just doing that, but it doesn't mean that you can't provide a top 20 finish, because if any one facet of your game is struggling, you're going to see it exposed repeatedly. And I always tend to think that when we get tournaments like that, and we can talk about how the USGA has lost some of these greens in the past where they've become too quick. I love the carnage, but I always tend to think that when there's difficulty from hole number one to hole number 18, there's never a foregone conclusion until the final ball is struck, because anything can happen in any moment. So from a viewing perspective, I love it. From a betting perspective, there's a different conversation to be had with that. And then you have a betting board where Scotty is 3-1. So there's a lot of decisions that have to be made. And I'm not even a proponent. I gave an impassioned speech on some of the Action Network shows where I think people are more concerned with trying to say that they're going to hit a winner than actually turn a profit in the betting market. those are discussions that we can have later in the show when we get into this board and when I have the number one pick here. But I do think there are a lot of players where if you give an extra win, and I don't want to start naming a million players, but give an extra win to Rory, give Xander the Players Championship. And I guarantee you with two victories heading here, Xander's 8 or 9 to 1 and not some of these totals that we got at opening. So it's a different outlook between betting and DFS. We'll talk about DFS moving forward from here, but it's going to add a unique board.
Definitely unique. I think you made another good point, which is really interesting. We started to see it last week about the challenge of the course. It's going to be difficult this week. It's going to be what we would consider maybe a bloodbath out there on this course. And, you know, what was interesting last week was as we were watching Sunday, it was more not like, oh, can somebody catch him? It's can somebody blow up and fall out of the lead because of how difficult the course was playing, right? It's like, how many strokes can you lose? Not how many can you gain or make up? And that might be the case here again, where it's like, you need to just be able to stay in control and not blow up on any holes. And that, like, the winner's probably not going to be more than 10 under, in my opinion. And I think that's a different way of watching golf, a different way of enjoying it, but still a very fascinating challenge that we will have in front of us. So, Spence, you buried the lead a little bit. You did win the draft. You picked the order, and you will be picking first. Will you be taking the person who wins every tournament that they play in for the most part, or maybe go a different direction? To be determined. Before we put you on the clock, for anyone new tonight joining the show, we are drafting teams, and the draft works like your typical snake draft where Spence will go first, I will go second. The audience, you will be drafting a team solo this week. I have fired you from my squad, so therefore you do not have my help. It will be two nominations. So one person nominates a player. The second person's double nominations. That will be your pick. You'll be going third, and David will be going fourth on the wheel. He'll have two in a row and we'll go back. The big caveat is you do need to stay within a DraftKings salary. So you can't take all the best players. You do need to make sure that you can afford your lineup in a real DraftKings team. All right, Spence, with the first pick, you are on the clock.
When I run my model over a two-year running perspective, and you're not going to really get too many differing viewpoints in general, just with how dominant Scottie Scheffler's been, but you look at the tee to green metrics, and this would be an expected per round output. Scottie's 2.70 strokes in the positive, Rory 1.63, Xander 1.45, Colin 1.36. Xander and Rory more so, and we see this with Xander, and this is where some of the disparity difference gets made up ever so slightly. When you look at strokes gained total, Scottie moves from 2.70 from tee to green to 2.63, just because we know the putter is hit and miss, where Xander has the ability where he's one of the top putters in the world. He's 2.05. He's the only other player in this tournament that is over two shots. And for me, there's always going to be this tee to green discrepancy that comes into play where you're going to lose to Scottie in that area. And in order to beat him, you need him to be either neutral or worse with the putter, and you need to go nuclear with the flat stick. So the most prototypical answer, and this is kind of the impassioned speech that I gave, where I sort of think Xander is going to go back-to-back after not winning a major. I'm going to throw a curveball here, though, after all of that being said. I am going to take Scottie Scheffler at $13,000. I will figure out my build from there. I know there's a lot of ownership. I think there's really soft pricing on this board. And the one thing I want to make sure that I don't do with the Scottie build, and there's going to be some of it, and I do have some ways I can get around it, is I don't want to end up in the exact same spots that every single Scottie build is going to end up in. And there are like five names down this board that I can guarantee you that most Scottie lineups end up merging with one of those names. I think from a betting answer, this is a complete stay away just because of the amount of exposure you have to put down on Scottie. For DFS, we can have an ownership outlook here and take a different stance. But, you know, Scottie's still the man to beat. I don't want any of my words to get twisted this week for as low as I've been on Scottie on most of these shows.
Wait, so you took Scottie?
I'm throwing a curveball and taking Scottie.
Whoa, I thought I was going to get him at two. You gave us this whole speech before the show that you thought – I guess we should wait now because you didn't take who I thought you were going to take. Oh, I'm baffled. Now I got to scramble. All right, Scottie Scheffler. I mean, listen, we don't need to spend too long about why you took Scottie Scheffler. I think it's pretty clear. If you're watching our show, you know what Scottie Scheffler has been doing in golf. So obviously, he's a great pick, and he's probably going to win the tournament. Now, I have to pivot and figure out, because I thought he was going to fall to two based on Spence threw me a curveball pre-show trying to throw me up. It was actually a smart play to do that. But I'm going to go here. I'm going to start with a value play. There's a few guys up top that I like that I hope one of them will get back to me. But I think one of the biggest misprices on the board this week, a guy who I used to take almost every week, he fell off a little bit this year, but I am back. My guy, Hideki Matsuyama. Yes, he may have had a back injury for a while. He wasn't playing, you know, so well. Hideki's back. And one of the things I love about Hideki is he's definitely plays to his – he's on a heater. He's playing really well. But I think to some of the points that Spencer was making, one of the things Hideki has been doing so well that I think is going to really translate well on this course is his scrambling and around the green. And he's been excellent recently in doing so. And so if this course becomes one of those things where it's impossible to land balls on the green and everyone's falling off, I think Hideki is as elite as anybody in being able to get up and down and ensuring good scores. And at 8K, I think he is tremendously underpriced. I thought he should have been at least a 9K golfer. So I'm going to go with my first pick on value with Hideki. Audience, you're on the clock. It looks like your pick might be in, so great job there. But we'll start with you, Spence. Any interest in Hideki this week?
Hideki's going to be a model darling for anyone who runs metrics. I don't think it hurts that he's also dominated with his iron play over the years at U.S. Opens. Like, look specifically at his strokes gained approach at U.S. Opens. It is consistently over five shots to the field with that area of his game. That addition of him being one of the best around the green players in the world should play extremely well for someone who saw projected off the tee increase for this track in my model, even if it's a very thin margin. It's going to be a lot of popularity around him, but it's one of those discussions where I feel like we've had it quite frequently on the show. And it's very relevant here. When Hideki is $10,000 and 20 something percent, it's a much different outlook than when he's $8,000 and 20%. We don't need that upside that sometimes he lacks in these spots. This, to me, is a good chalk situation with Hideki. I had an outright on him. I took him at 55-1. He's gotten a little trendy in the market recently, but I like the Hideki pick, Joel.
Boom. Pick endorsed. I love it. Audience, picks in. Great job. Before we get to that, David, any interest in Hideki this week?
I mean, I just love that Joel's like started out not only just himself withdrawing from the tournament, but also like locking in his WD equity with his very first pick of the draft at the US Open. It's great. Look, I do think that Hideki, this course should suit. I mean, it's almost like links-like in style. You've got all this like really short, tight lies around the greens, the upside down saucer type greens as well, where you're going to see a lot of runoff that Spence like so expertly analyzed. Basically no rough whatsoever, which is like odd compared to other US Opens. But I do think that Hideki's underrated around the greens. Like, he is very, very good with his short game and his ability to scramble. Of some concern is that you are getting WD equity, as I mentioned, which Joel is, of course, loves and like jumps on straight away. But you're also getting 17% ownership. And is there a situation where Hideki withdraws and 17% of lineups are just instantly dead? Well, potentially. And so there's that factor taken. But as I said, I mean, that's something that Joel loves to lean into.
Fair enough. All right. Audience is locked in. And the audience is going to start on the LIV Tour with a little Brooks Koepka, a man known to rise to the occasion at majors. Spence, what's your take on Brooks this week?
I think he's fine. I guess my one concern with him just, and I'm right now have him in my player pool, so this is not meant to be anything other than kind of where I'm going with it, but he has not been great this season, whether it's LIV for the majority of it. And if you look at the major championships, he's been rather disappointing in a lot of these spots. I think if we're directly comparing LIV golfers, and maybe this is where I'm a little bit different than the market. I know the space seems to be very high on Bryson DeChambeau. They're very high on Cameron Smith. for me, my favorite LIV golfers would either be Brooks or like the more contrarian route with Dustin Johnson, which is where I went at the PGA Championship and it didn't quite work out. But I still think Dustin has playability at a US Open. So I guess if we're looking specifically LIV golfers here, it's probably a fair price for Brooks at what seems to be a fair ownership. Like there's four players, even when Rahm was in this field, and that's obviously now going to include Bryson too, but there were four players that were a positive value for me where I saw a lot of the win equity. The three are the natural names that we're going to talk about, which I assume, and I don't want to speak for David here, but I feel like I just let one of them fall into his lap right now with the way that this draft has gone on. I'll let David talk about his two picks, but it's an interesting board at the top. We'll leave it at that.
Well, there you have it. David, you got two. Would love your take on Brooks this week, and then who you take with your first two picks.
I mean, I don't think I'm the best person to ask about Brooks Koepka because I just always seem to get him wrong. He'll turn up at a tournament with absolutely no form. I know that Spence suffers from the same phenomenon. He'll turn up with zero form whatsoever, and then suddenly he's like leading and winning major championships again. Look, I have concerns about ownership, for example. His previous result here obviously is going to be very, very tempting to a lot of people, having finished fourth here in 2014. A lot of people are going to see that. A lot of people are going to just kind of plug Koepka in because it's a major. And is he really playing his best golf at the moment? You know, it's pretty hard to say. It's pretty indifferent 26 at the PGA Championship. I'm going to go and stack up top straight away, and I'm going to take two players that I think Spence probably suspects I was going to take. And so that's Xander Schauffele and Colin Morikawa. Spence gave a great spiel about Xander Schauffele before taking Scottie Scheffler, which surprised both myself and Joel. But look, I spoke last week about the difference between Xander Schauffele in 200 plus yards on approach and second place, which is Tony Finau. At the time, that difference was the same as the difference between Tony Finau and Adam Svensson in that field last week. I mean, he is just miles better than everybody else in the world of golf over 200 yards. And it feels like Xander is in a difficult situation because he's just come against a freight train in Scottie Scheffler, who's just running away with golf tournaments. Like, if Xander Schauffele was playing this well any other time, he'd be stacking up victories. As I mentioned, he did so in 2022. Included in that was the Scottish Open victory as well, which, as I said, I think that this is going to kind of play almost links-like because you've got zero rough. You can run up the ball to the green. It's basically just like wire grass and pine needles and sand as soon as you miss the fairway. And Xander's just got that all-round game as well as excelling from 200 yards. Colin Morikawa was just playing excellent golf as well. I mean, he's contended at both majors this year. He was third at the Masters, fourth at the PGA Championship. He's followed that up with the fourth at Charles Schwab, a second last week at the Memorial. So I love that we're starting to see his game back. Of course, he's also an Open champion, so he's got that going for him. Great record at the US Open, where he's finished fourth, fifth, and 14th. Xander's US Open record isn't too shabby either. I mean, he's never finished worse than 14th in all his attempts at that tournament. So I think there's options further down the board where I can get some value and balance this lineup out. But happy to take a lot of win equity in Xander and Colin here.
I just want to say one thing really fast, Joel. Like, this is a silly start that at the fourth spot that David's able to get Schauffele and Morikawa. Yeah. I wrote a Rotoballer article yesterday, and my favorite pick in the $10,000 and up, and this is taking ownership into account, was Xander Schauffele in the $10,000 and up. And then in the $9,000 and up, I know there's a lot of ownership around Morikawa, but I still think he's the best play in that section. So there's a real case to be made that he probably grabbed the two best players value-wise that we can find in both of those two areas. So kudos to you, David. And I would like some of the credit for setting up the draft order and throwing a curveball here.
Yes, that's very fair. Either one of those guys, to me, could have easily been the second pick in the draft. I didn't go that route. And now David has been put into an excellent position. Somehow the audience drops the ball, takes Brooks Koepka, out of nowhere. They messed up last week. I think we need to call Sia in right now to help the audience, because audience can help themselves. So Sia, if you're out there and you're available, the audience needs you desperately to come on and give them some glimmer of hope to compete in this week's DraftCast. We need you, Sia. Please, audience, get your nominations in. We need one more from you here. While we wait for that final nomination, I guess, Spence, I'll go back to you. I know you said pre-show that Xander was your pick to win the tournament, and then you took Scotty first. So I know you like Xander, but I want to know if you have any concerns about the ownership on both Xander, which isn't as bad, but Colin, whose ownership is going to be pretty high this week.
I think David is going to be able to wait to maneuver through that problem. There's enough spots to get different. I tend to think that from a safety perspective in my model, like, you're not going to get much safer for the price than what Colin Morikawa is. And from some of the upside totals that I have with Xander, there's a ton to love. So I know we've talked about doing this before, and I don't want to do this every single round or every single show necessarily, but if we're looking at what the best value pick was in the first round, credit goes to David there at the 104.
Boom. Nicely done. All right. Audience pick is in. Bryson going with the old rivalry. Brooks and Bryson tag team back again at the top. Using up a lot of salary on Team Liv to get started. Interesting approach. We'll go to you here, David. Any interest in Bryson this week?
Not really. I mean, I understand that he's been playing great in majors, but I'm seeing like him pushing 18% ownership off the back of that. And then when you compare that to, say, Xander, who you're getting at 15% within that range, I mean, Colin Morikawa is like 18.5, and he's much cheaper than Bryson. I'd probably go one of those two routes and take the guys that I drafted, which is just me backing up my own decisions, which doesn't really sound that great. But yeah, look, I do think that Xander and Colin, in terms of like the ownership leverage and the pricing, are a better selection than what looks to be like a pretty chalky Bryson DeChambeau.
There you have it. All right. I'm going to go with my pick here. You know, obviously a guy that I like. I am always drafting. Audience, I tried to get him for you last week. You turned me down. I'm not making the same mistake for myself. I'm going to take Ludwig, who has proven himself. And even with his bad bum knee, Ludwig has been spectacular. And he shows up in the big tournaments. And that's especially what I think you're going to see this week in a tough U.S. Open major. I think we're going to see Ludwig. I like Ludwig to get a top 10, maybe even a top 5. Of course, with the winning potential upside. He does everything. He's got the all-around game, you know, total driving. He can putt. He can get hot pretty much anywhere. There's no real weakness in his game. To be able to get Ludwig in the 9K range, even below Brooks and Bryson and all those guys, I think he's a great value. So I really like Ludwig. I'm pleased he fell back to me. David, would love your take. Will you be playing Ludwig at all this week?
Yeah, and this, again, it reiterates the point around Bryson, because Ludwig just really does seem like fantastic value. Slightly cheaper, obviously, than Bryson. You're saving 500 in salary, but you're also getting a ton of ownership leverage. Like, he's only 13% ownership at the moment in terms of my projections. We'll await Stephen's excellent ownership article over at WinDaily Sports, some of the best ownership numbers in the business. But, I mean, the guy's ranked fifth in the world, and he's playing excellent golf. He's so consistent. We know what he can do off the tee, and he really hasn't got any holes in his game. He's also excellent on approach over 200 yards. And, you know, if we're getting 13% ownership versus like 18% Bryson, I'd much rather play Ludwig here.
Boom. I am with you on that. Spence, you got Scheffler. You got two more here. Would love your take on Ludwig this week. And then who you taking with your next two picks?
Yeah, I love the Oberg pick. If you want to look at, we'll call it just Bryson and down into this $9,000 range. This is, to me, where a lot of the win equity gets lost, where I would rather just move up for a Xander or a Scheffler in a lot of these spots. The two names that I don't have that agreement with would be Oberg and Colin Morikawa. Like, I think Oberg and Morikawa would be the cream of the crop in this $9,000 section. So there's a lot to like about Oberg. You're getting this reduction in ownership. because of the injury concerns that have hit about whether he has a torn meniscus or partially torn meniscus, or if he doesn't. Like, they've been very coy on it, but he looked fantastic last week. No matter what was wrong with him, he really looked good. So I will say this, Joel, like, if we do want to talk about withdrawal potential, I mean, the Matsuyama Oberg route is about as volatile as that's going to get. So I just want to throw that out there, but I like the picks that you have. And I do think with Oberg directly, you're going to get some leverage that's created there because of that. But as I move us in,
I will just add quickly. I'm serious when I say this. I really am not doing that on purpose. That is just how that happened to break. I'm not intentionally taking these guys that can with D, but WD. But you know what? Those were the best plays for me in those spots.
So there is a golfer here that I am very happy that fell to me. And I wasn't going to take him at the 101. Like, for just the clickbait and being able to pull the clip, I did consider it. And if you could have guaranteed me that Rory would have fallen back to me in the spot, maybe I would have gone this route and been a little bit different with it. But there is a golfer that I think is one of the best values on the board. And what you're always looking for when you take these long shot wagers, and I know he's not necessarily long shot price compared to some of these options, but you're always looking for somebody who can overachieve their baseline projection when given a very specific venue that's going to be used for that week. And so one of the prime examples I always give is Wyndham Clark at LACC last year when he won the US Open. That is essentially what he did inside of my model. He landed inside the top 10 for weighted strokes gain total, expected scoring on firm conditions, projected scoring on fast courses. You're always going to get this boom or bust potential that comes into play, but my model absolutely loved, and he broke my model in a lot of ways, Minwoo Lee. He generated some of the most robust returns that I had. He was fifth in this field when combining long iron proximity plus around the green production, third for expected total driving. And oh yeah, I keep talking about this weighted strokes gain total, how Wyndham was seventh. Minwoo Lee was fifth for me. That is a stat that mimics a lot of what we saw with Clark. And when we're talking about this overachieving of the baseline, that result when he was seventh with Clark last year put him 20 spots in my model above his baseline. Minwoo Lee is 34 spots above his. You think of quality total driving, his ability on a course like this, the proximity numbers from the shorter ranges, yes, there's problems. You start stretching this from 175 plus yards, you get a completely different profile. We've seen him pop before in some big tournaments. I think Minwoo ends up being on the millionaire maker team that wins it. And I think he is a real threat at the outright price to actually take down this title.
Wow. Minwoo Lee. Ben's taking a stance this week. Good value there. David, would love your take on Minwoo this week.
I love Minwoo Lee this week, and I'm surprised that the ownership is what it is, because objectively he is too cheap, and he was one of the players in terms of value that I was looking at drafting within this next round to balance out the Xander Collins start. Obviously, we've, like, beginning of the year, like, everybody was like, Minwoo Lee's going to win the US Open this year. Like, and there was all this chatter about him going out and winning the US Open, and of course we've seen him finish 27th on debut and then fifth last year at the US Open, and he's got a game made for these type of tests. We've seen the approach play starting to turn around, now on a run of four consecutive finishes of 26 or better. That includes the Masters, that includes the PGA Championship, and of all the major tests, the US Open is the best suited for what Minwoo does. And in terms of this particular track, I mean, it almost looks like kind of Australian sandbelt kind of region with those runoff sandy areas, basically no rough, almost links-like in style. Well, that should suit Minwoo Lee to the T. So he's excellent value at 7,300. Very disappointed to miss out. I really like the start from Spence here.
I'll move us into the next selection. I needed just a second there to figure out which route I wanted to go in. I know there's a little bit of ownership with this player I'm taking, and you can probably credit or blame Data Golf for this, because they massively moved this player's number, and they are correct in their assessment here. Like, I didn't get the outright ticket on him because I still like him from safety markets a little bit more than to actually win this tournament. But I'm going to take Ben on at 7,100. Massive climber in me and for me in my model in weighted tee to green when I weighed it specifically for Pinehurst. I talked about Apex, and Minwoo Lee gives you that Apex that we're talking about. Ben On does the same thing of just this ability to be able to stop some of these long irons on the putting surface at a higher rate than a lot of these names. So I'm happy to get Ben On here. He's a sharp mover in the market for a reason, and he was a top 18 projected win equity candidate for me. That's down here at the $7,100 price.
Ben On, definitely a guy I will be playing this week as well. I think Ben On is one of the more underrated golfers on tour. David, how about you? Are you on Benny Ann this week?
I'm probably not as positive on Benny Ann as Spencer's, and part of that comes down to, like, objectively, Benny Ann is on a tier. He is playing great golf at the moment. The question comes in is, this is kind of just the way that I've run my modeling this week, in that I've kind of taken this route where I think it's more kind of length-like in nature, and as a result of that, like, his performances on the DP World Tour at some of the links courses, his performances at the Open have sometimes left something to be desired. And so my question just comes down to whether that's the most appropriate test for him. Objectively, as I said, he's playing great golf this year, and I may be proven wrong on that regard. But I've just seen that we've got a VIP guest who's jumped into the waiting room, ready to jump in and critique everyone's plays and answer Joel's call to pull the audience back into line for all the slander that they were throwing at him at the beginning of the show.
Yes, yes. See ya.
Oh,
welcome back.
Hello. What's up, guys? I came to yell at Joel. Joel, Hideki Matsuyama is one of my outrights, and you took him on your team, which means what are we looking at? A round one or round two withdrawal?
Ooh, yeah, probably. You know, the most likely scenario is withdrawal like 5 minutes after tee off. So you make sure it's locked into your lineup, and then you don't get any points. That's the
most. I like how this is shaping up. Listen, there's some of these guys I'm absolutely not on, which could be great for those who are drafting them. And some of these guys, like David, the Xander Collins start is pretty amazing. For the record, sorry for crashing the party. I mean, we can continue on. I can't stay the whole time, but I caught a little window, and I miss you guys, and I miss the chat. And so I figured I'd crash the party. Thanks for having me.
See, we always miss you. And this is an open door policy. You're welcome whenever you want to stop by. But I was saying, it was more of a need for you this week because how badly the audience has been fumbling their drafts that they just needed some support, and no better than you to come on and straighten them out. So that's why we brought you on. Let's get the ship righted.
Hey, Sia, if you have a second, I really think you should take a similar approach to what Joel did last week. Like, let's have Joel make his selection, and we should get some of the audience recommendations, and you should be the one that leads the audience into their next pick, and we'll let you get out of there after that.
Oh, that's interesting. So in other words, I see nominations and I grab one to second.
You pick your favorite and you will be the second pick of it.
Is that what Joel was doing the entire show? Or was he just doing that for one of the picks?
No, he did it the entire show.
Mm-hmm. Joel, what is that? Wow. Wait, taking the power away from the audience. All right, I love this call, though. This is fun. Okay, yeah, I'm definitely going to do that.
Sorry. I love it. All right, well, I hope I steal whatever pick the audience wants right now. And I'm going for the first pick in the 6K range in today's draft. I'm going super value. My favorite value play on the board, Christian Bezuidenhout.
Yes, good pick.
He is just playing great golf. And if we're going to go off that theory that we were mentioning earlier on the course breakdown, where it's just going to be challenging to land shots on the green and you're going to need guys who can scramble, he has been doing that extraordinarily well. I mean, he has gained strokes around the green in every tournament he's played in since March 10th. And he's played in, what, almost 10, maybe 9 tournaments since then. He's great with the putter. He's going to gain strokes on approach. He's been doing that as well. At 6,200, I just think he's way underpriced. I think you can even get a top 20 from him this week. So I think he's the best value board on the play for me this week. I want to go to you on this one, David. Will you be playing Cebes?
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Because as I said, if we're sort of thinking that these dome-shaped sort of greens, you're going to see a lot of runoff, as you kind of touched about. Well, Bezuidenhout's one, he's been hitting it great on approach, but if he is missing greens, I've got a lot of confidence in his ability around the greens, his short game and his putting in order to keep the momentum going. I mean, we've only seen a handful of players, and I mean like four, shoot under par at this golf course ever. It's going to be a very, very tough test. One of those was Martin Kaymer, who ran away with victory at minus nine. Outside of that, you had Ricky Fowler, Eric Compton shoot one under, Payne Stewart won at one under, and then Michael Campbell famously won at even par, beating Tiger Woods by two strokes. So it's going to be a very, very stern test, and his ability to scramble, keep the round going, I think is very, very promising.
Boom. I love it. I love it. Audience, make sure you get those nominations in. Sia needs to get your final pick in here. Before we get to that pick, Spence, any opinion this week on Seabass?
Bezuidenhout was the most mispriced player that I had inside my model this week. It's moved a little bit at some books. Gave it over at Bovada when it was at minus 120. It was Bezuidenhout over Adam Hadwin. You can still get that at minus 125 at Bet365. I like that as a head-to-head value to consider, but there's a reason why there's a lot of ownership around Bezuidenhout. It's just a complete mispricing.
Totally agree.
All right. See ya. You're back. You're here to help the audience. How are you going to right this ship?
Well, first of all, Seabass T30 is plus 170 at pretty much every major book. I think you might want to look into that. Let's see. There's a lot of nominations. I like most of them. Darren's really lobbying for Sungjae Im. That's not one of the two. Like, here's what I want. There's two that I like. And so maybe, I don't know, do I just choose one? Russell Henley and Alex Noren. My lean is to Alex Noren here. I like both of these guys. I like their ability to putt. I like their weighted tee to green stuff. I like that they can do everything pretty well. Billy Horschel's an interesting one too. 150-1 to win this thing. Don't hate that. So to me, it's between Russell Henley and Alex Noren. Should I do something to break that tie, or should I just pick one?
I think you pull a Joel and just make the selection. Make everybody upset.
I'm going with Jeff M. He says, boom, see ya, Noren. Noren was my instinct. I've kind of been talked into Henley. Henley's a guy I had last week in DFS. I liked him a lot. I thought I was a little sloppy with the ball striking. Alex Noren is a guy on a very tough course. I just like his ability to save par. I like that he does everything pretty well. I certainly like the value. So the audience, Ed says, get lost, see ya. Absolutely love that. Zach says, geez. We're taking Alex Noren here. You guys get to pick the next one.
Boom. Alex Noren off the board. 6'9". I think he is a really good value. Under 7K. He has been having a great season. And he's another one of those that fits that mold where he's really good scrambling around the green. If that's the case this week, he should definitely rise or at least should help him in this tournament. How about you, Spence? Are you on Alex Noren this week?
I'm indifferent either way with it. I feel like I've played this Alex Noren game during most major championships and have always left feeling disappointed with it. I probably would have leaned towards Russell Henley. I know he's another popular choice, but this is what happens in major championships. And you can even throw Alex Noren into this mix and all the players that are beneath them. You get very soft pricing in this $6,000 section where there are golfers that, like an Alex Noren in some fields, he's $9,500. And I know that we get a much more challenging field this go around, but these are golfers that have legitimate top 10 equity. It just comes down to picking which ones you like. I'm probably indifferent though on the Alex Noren choice.
All right. All right. David, you got two here. You had a heck of a start. Where are you going from here?
Yeah, I'll endorse Sia's nomination for Alex Noren there. I think that his pedigree on league-style courses is really going to be a benefit. His ability in around the green and putting will keep him basically ticking along. The small concern is that he's kind of started to show some regression on approach the last couple of tournaments. That's always the worry, but as a result of that, you're getting him at like 10% ownership when he's quite clearly underpriced. And then you've got Russell Henley right next to him, who I'm seeing like pushing over 15% at the moment. So a nice little pivot there, and I probably would have preferred the non-route that he took. So I'm going to take a little bit of value here now with my next picks. I would have taken Minwu Lee had he still been on the board, but I'm going to go with Dean Burmester. Plenty of distance off the tee, so being a 7,500-yard par 70 isn't of too much concern. Finished 11th at the Open Championship at St. Andrews back in 2022. He was a great value play for us that week. Also finished 7th at the Alfred Dunhill Links. And I've got a bit of confidence coming out of a 12th at the PGA Championship, where he gained a ton of strokes on approach, 1.3 strokes per round he was gaining, as well as some other decent results on the LIV Tour. Noted in that as well is that he finished, where he won the Doral LIV Miami tournament. Doral's a stern test of golf. He won it at minus 11. He's had a number of victories in that kind of like minus 10 to minus 15 range on some of the tougher courses. And his links pedigree, I think, makes some excellent value here at 6,800. I'm going to stick in that 6,000 range. And look, I'd be remiss to not take the Kiwi here and go with Ryan Fox. Obviously, as I mentioned, Michael Campbell won the US Open here famously in 2005, but Danny Lee, another Kiwi, if you guys even remember him because he went to LIV, he actually won the US Amateur at Pinehurst number two as well. So there is some correlation between New Zealanders playing well, and I kind of liken it to TRI, which is Ryan Fox's home course here in New Zealand, in terms of tree line fairways, but also basically no rough, almost links like in style. He set the course record there at 61 earlier this year. He's got great links form, including winning the Alfred Dunhill Links in 2022. He backed that up, coming second when defending in 2023. He's also had a 16th at the Open Championship, and he's in great form at the moment. Finished 7th last time we saw him at the RBC Canadian Open, and he started to turn his approach play around, but the putter looks like it's really heading up. So I think he's great value at 6,500, and you're getting no ownership on him at 3.5%.
Well, there you have. I have to say, it's just the most, that was the most David two picks that you possibly could have. Like, that was so on brand for you in that round. See, you're agreeing with me. What do you think? Are you behind the two picks? And was that not just two David picks?
It was two David picks. I mean, I think both of these guys, for me, and I speak for me only, are a bit of an unknown. I mean, David is such like the Ryan Fox whisperer. I mean, they're buddies. He's interviewed him. He was not on my radar at all at the RBC Canadian. In fact, I remember asking David about him prior to the RBC Canadian because I knew he liked him. And Ryan Fox was great there. And he wasn't on my radar at all. Dean Burmester, listen, the LIV guys, it's interesting. You know, the one thing that comes to mind, a friend of mine has a Dean Burmester matchup that actually I'd like to just pull you guys real quick about, because it's a matchup I might put in as well. Dean Burmester versus Dustin Johnson. He's like a minus 120 favorite at this point. Curious, because again, these LIV guys to some degree, especially Dustin Johnson, a bit of an unknown. Can I kick it back to you, David? What do you think of that matchup?
Burmester's minus 120 in that matchup?
Yes.
Interesting. I mean, I think that in some ways makes him a more appealing play in DFS, because there's obviously some disparity in terms of the pricing in those two when it comes to DFS. So, I mean, if the books are saying that, you know, Dean Burmester, who's $600 cheaper than Dustin Johnson, is actually the favorite in that matchup, I think that's extremely intriguing. I don't know if it's... Yeah, do you know what? I'll endorse it. I've put Dean Burmester as one of my best bets this week. I've got this cool thing going with the TAB here in New Zealand, which is the major bookmaker, where they're going to do a bet boost for me every week off the back of the radio show that I do with SNZ Sports Radio here in New Zealand. And my bet boost this week was Dean Burmester top 40, which they boosted from plus 120 to plus 160 very, very generously. So nice. Really, really do like that play. So, yeah, Dustin, I just think his motivation may be lacking a bit. I do really like this setup for Burmester this week.
Spencer, can I ask you real quick? I was going to ask you the same thing. Go ahead, sorry.
So I don't necessarily have a strong take one way or another on this play. These are two golfers that my model like I'm higher than consensus on Dustin Johnson. I do think he's volatile, but to me, these are two quality plays. I just want to one up the answer that David talked about, because if you want to look at a round one matchup, and I'm not condoning that this is a good play, but if you want to look at where some of these prices are in the market, Dean is minus 132 at a book out there against Cameron Smith, who is everybody's darling, it seems like. And I would lean towards, I mean, I also don't have a massive difference there, but it kind of shows where the market's moving here with all these players, I guess would be the best way to word it.
Yeah. Interesting.
Very interesting. All right. Well, there you have it. Audience and Sia, you're back on the clock. Sia.
They've got their pick. They've got their pick. Zach Jefferson's confirmed it. I've seen a lot of Billy Horschel stuff in here. It looks like that's the pick for the audience. And I endorse Billy Horschel. I think Horschel's really interesting this week.
There you have it. In agreement. Haven't seen that in a long time. Billy Ho it is. Billy Ho playing good golf. 6,600. Pretty good value. Spence, how about you? Are you on Billy Ho this week?
Good safety numbers in my model. He cracked the top 35 there. Some of the statistical data pushed him in the wrong direction. I guess it's going to come down to ownership. I see him as one of the more popular names in the section. And the problem and why I even give that answer is because if I'm going to play Bezuidenhout at, you know, 14, 15% or wherever we're at, like, I don't want to get caught with every single name of popularity of Aaron Rye and Sepp Straka and Russell Henley and Billy Horschel. Like, somebody has to get cut from this range, and I probably lean towards Horschel being that, but I don't have a massive take one way or another. I think he's perfectly fine if you want to consider him.
All right. All right. There you have it. I am pleased that this player has fallen to me. The next player in the 6K range that I feel is massively underpriced. He is going to be chalky. I'm going to just eat the chalk here. I think I'm getting different in some other spots, especially up top. But yes, I will be solidifying Sepp Straka here within the fourth round, 6,500. I mean, he has four top tens in his last five outings. His ball striking has been spectacular. The gray area is going to be his around the green. In his last two events, he's gained over three strokes around the green. If he carries that momentum, I think he's going to have a great result. But the three before that, he's lost significant strokes around the green. So, you know, which guy is going to show up there? If he has that mojo going, if he has that scrambling, I think he gets a really good result. And this is going to be a steal of a price tag. We'd love to get your feedback on Sepp. Sia, are you playing Straka at all this week?
I mean, I love the value. It's really hard to look at what Sepp Straka has been doing for most of 2024 and say, no, I'm off him this week. I mean, obviously, he's going to have a lot of popularity, and that's a great reason in DFS to be off of him. But like guys like him and Cebes are, again, I think are clearly mispriced, and Sepp Straka is showing it at all different types of courses. I like him. I listen, if it's going to like 6K chalk this week is kind of like 7K chalk. If you're in the Wind Daily Discord, you know, that's rule 17. We tend to not play those. So I totally get fading Sepp Straka, guys like Cebes. But I mean, do I just in a vacuum, do I like Sepp Straka? Yeah, I think he's going to be just fine this week.
There you have it. Spence, you got two coming up here, but I love your take first. Will you be playing Straka this week?
I'm going to give the contrarian take here. I think Straka, for the price at 6,500, is probably fair of where he should be, which is already contrarian to begin with. But I actually tend to believe that he is one of the worst leverage plays on the board. And I'm just going to give a couple stats in my model to kind of back that up, because he has been great. And my model was on him last week at the Memorial. We've seen a bunch of great results, like five top 16 finishes over the last six starts. He's averaged 4.52 shots to the field, tee to green over that span. My bigger concern comes into play of how he specifically fits Pinehurst. He ranked 89th for me when combining long iron proximity plus around the green, 75th for weighted bogey avoidance, 88th for weighted scoring, 74th for expected strokes gained total. A lot of that comes down to play because he gets this reduction from 175 plus yards, where he gets worse with the approach game. And Sia talked about the around the green data a little bit, and so did you, Joel, I believe, where he's 115th in my model for weighted around the green performance. If he is having more stress put on his around the green game because he's not hitting greens in regulation from a distance, it's a very similar mentality for me from what we saw at the PGA Championship, where a different course and maybe a little bit of a longer course provided a finish for him that just ended up being a suboptimal outcome. So I bet Minwoo Lee in a matchup against him. That was one of the routes I decided to go. I'm willing to let Sepp Straka beat me. I just think because he's so cheap, everybody's going to play him. And where I see Bezadenhout as good value, I kind of see the opposite with Straka, where it's just neutral value. But for my two picks, I'm going to actually go with a player in my model that has a little bit of negative value, which I normally wouldn't do in this spot because there's some ownership. But there is so much that my model like from an upside perspective with Sahith Theegala at 7,600. Inside of the top 15 for weighted strokes gain total, the Bermuda putting and his ability to make putts. Like, I keep talking about how you beat Scottie Scheffler is the person who can go nuclear with the putter. I think he has a real potential here. We know about on the upside of it, the around the green game, he needs to be a little bit better than the long-term data has possessed, but he has been good historically on these fast screens when you put him around the green. I think the Gala was a very interesting play at 7,600. And then if we want to talk about these outlooks that I've taken where I've been very aggressive in my stances on these players. And this is a golfer that I thought he was a intriguing outright bet. And when I went as aggressive as I did at the top of the board, I couldn't get to this player at like the 44, 45 to one number, but there are certain golfers in the world. Xander carried this for a long time. Tony Finau would be one of those names. My choice here of Tommy Fleetwood at 8,500. It's these players that are consistently in contention, but they don't end up winning the golf tournament. So then it becomes this perceived lack of win equity that enters the equation. And it's one thing, and it's kind of a similar sentiment that I gave with Hideki. It's one thing when Fleetwood is $10,000 and the lack of win equity starts coming into play. It's another at 8,500 where we don't necessarily need that victory. He pairs very well with Scottie Scheffler. I know there's a lot of ownership, and that's probably a route that most people are going to try to go, which is where there is some popularity to this lineup, to where I wish I could have gotten to Bezadenhout and left money on the table somehow. Like, even with the popularity there, that was one of my ways. Just leave $1,000 on the table, play Bezadenhout at the bottom, and get unique with the build that way. And that's something everybody should be considering. But I really like Tommy Fleetwood's upside. I don't know if he gets himself across the finish line, but I thought at 8,500, he was too cheap for a golfer that was a top 12 projected win equity candidate for me.
You know, I think that's interesting because Tommy Fleetwood was a guy that I've been going back and forth on this week, where I like him, I want to play him, but I keep getting kind of torn by his results and they're not there. It's a little price, there's some value plays. So I'm glad you're on him because I think that's going to lean me back into Tommy. I think he does show up in these big events often as well. I think you can get a really good result from him at 8,500. Sia, would love your feedback. Will you be interested in Tommy Fleetwood this week?
Tommy Fleetwood is itch. I don't think I'm going to have him in my player pool. I think in that range, as I'm looking at it, like Matt Fitzpatrick and Tony Finau, obviously Hideki for a few hundred less. Like, I'm more intrigued by them, but I don't dislike the argument that Spencer just levied. I mean, obviously Tommy Fleetwood's commanding a little bit more ownership than most of the guys I just mentioned, other than Hideki. It's fine. He's not going to be in my pool. Like I said, I'll probably be going down the board a little bit in that range, but I like the argument with Theegala. I think he's going relatively unnoticed. I mean, I'm trying to, he's not, he's actually got some ownership to him more than I thought. I do like the upside for Theegala. I think he could blow up, but this is a spot where most of the golfers can blow up. So I think this is a strong team.
All right. Well, I have a plan here. And that plan was to take Theegala. So he is gone. And therefore, I am trying to figure out where I am pivoting from this point.
Well, Joel, as you stall, I'm going to give you a second because I got to bounce. But before I do, is it cool if I just give out my first round leaders and you guys give them out at the end of the show, but I'll just give them out right now?
Do it. Yeah.
All right. And I'll be in the chat, by the way. I'll be watching the rest of the way. All right. My first round leaders are, just going off memory here, I've got four. I got Colin Moore, and they're relatively short odds because this is a brutal course. I've got Colin Morikawa at 30-1, all morning tee times, by the way. I've got Justin Thomas. I believe he's 45-1. That's the number I got as first round leader. Tony Finau at 55-1. And the last one, it was Sam Burns at 60-1. Can I, before I leave though, Can I just get everybody's thoughts real quick on, oh, it's table talk. I can't do that. Because it was one of those names. I'm very intrigued as to how you guys feel about a certain name. But I'm going to wait. I'm going to see how this plays out. And then I can ask you in the Win Daily Discord.
Fair enough. Sia, we appreciate you as always. Sia, before you head out,
yeah,
do you want to tell everyone where else they can find you this week?
Like I said, I'll be visiting the Win Daily Discord here and there. My time is thin this particular week. I'll tell you what, somebody mentioned Meg McDonald, that she should come on the show. She's my counterpart on my DC, Maryland, Virginia show. If any of you are in that area, 5:30, we go live. We have a sports betting show. Check us out there. I could endorse a few other things, but that would be fun. Anybody who's in that Virginia, Maryland, DC area, tune into Monumental Sports Network. Catch me and Meg McDonald, who covers a lot of golf, by the way, at 5:30.
Well, Sia, we appreciate you as always. You're welcome back on anytime you want. And if you haven't, or if you're obviously everyone who watches our show knows who Sia is, but check him out. He is absolutely fantastic, and you will for sure be getting some winning plays as long as you follow Sia. Thank you, Sam.
Thanks, fellas. Have a good show.
All right. So, you know what I decided to do here, Spence? I decided that since you stole my guy, I'm going to punish you by taking Jason Day. Because it's the ultimate troll. If Jason Day has a great week, it's just going to make you feel bad. It's like, you could have had him, I got him, and now you got to watch me succeed with your guy, Jason Day. So, of course, before I go off, my reasoning behind it is, Jason Day, while his iron play and driver have left something to be desired, he is spectacular with his putter. I mean, spectacular with his putter. And is above average scrambling around the green. So if my narrative of that's what you're going to need to excel on is the narrative this week, I think Jason Day can rise up and have a really good week this week in a really tough golf course. So Spencer, as a Jason Day truther, will you be playing Jason Day this week?
I full faded Jason Day at the Memorial. I had Sung J.M. over him in a matchup. I had Sepp Straka over him on day one. I didn't love that venue. And that's that hometown narrative that came into play where on a course that he doesn't even really play during his free time. And that public outlook of it, I just didn't like. For all the reasons that I did not like Jason Day last week, I think this is a really nice spot for him. He actually produced inside of my model last tournament at an event that I didn't expect him to. When I ran a lot of those baseline around the green plus putting into his actual ball striking totals, he was pretty flat across the board, which to me is a good result for a player here where we know the short game is immaculate. The only thing that could potentially be a problem are the irons, but it's kind of the similar answer I gave at the beginning where if all players are going to be struggling with their irons and you get a reduction in GIR percentage, then it really comes down to what does your total driving look like? Can you create an advantage there, which Jason Day does in my model? And how's the short game? Can you create an advantage in that area? Jason Day does that exact same thing. So I think he gets a nice boost. I think he's very playable for DFS. I tend to believe he's a top 30 player in this tournament. So for the price you're getting here, I consider this to be a value, Joel.
Boom. I love it. Makes me feel good about my pick. Audience, we need to get your pick locked in. So let's see a few nominations. Let's get that second nomination in and lock it in. While we wait, David, any interest in Jason Day this week?
Yeah, I think Jason Day is the perfect pivot to Sahith Theegala. You're getting a 5% discount on ownership, it being only 7% versus about 12% for Sahith. Look, I mean, this is the danger, right? When they put out US Open pricing before the Memorial's even finished. And so you get a bunch of these mispriced spots. Sepp Straka is like a prime example at 6,500. Like, he would have been 7,200 had the result, him finishing fifth at the Memorial, being banked in there as well. So, look, I do think it's a really good spot with Jason Day. As I mentioned with Min Woo Lee, Australian Sandbelt region kind of very, very similar to what I expect Pioneers number two to play like. He's got the around the green game. Fourth recently in North Carolina at the Wells Fargo as well. So his game looks like it's really turning around, and he's got a good record in US Opens in general, let alone I think that this is kind of a better test for him than some of the other spots. So I do really like Jason Day, and I think he's the perfect player to pivot to avoid the Gala chalk.
Boom. I love it. I love it. Feeling good about that. I don't know if we lost Zach Jeffers for the lock, but it looks like the pick is in. And correct me if I'm wrong, but it's Fitzpatrick? Yeah, we're going to lock in Fitzpatrick here for the audience. Certainly a value pick here at 8,200. I'm going to be honest with you, Fitzpatrick will not be in my player pool this week. I just think there's some guys in the 7K range that I think are as good, if not better, that I can play over him. That doesn't mean he can't have a good week, but I'm going to be heading in a different direction. David, you got 2 years to run under your squad, but would love your take on Fitzpatrick this week.
I had two first-round leaders last week. That was Xander Schauffele, who finished third after the first round. The other one was Matt Fitzpatrick, who didn't play so well in the first round, but he ended up rounding out the week quite nicely, finishing up in fifth. And part of my reasoning was I just felt that Matt Fitzpatrick was playing better golf than a lot of people were giving him credit for. In saying that, last week he did a lot with the putter. He gained 7 strokes putting. I mean, that can be a typical kind of result for Fitzpatrick because we do know how good he is with the flat stick. But that always does just lead to a bit of concern whether there's some regression coming. In saying that, he's a winner at the Alpha Downhill Links, which I mentioned. He's won the US Open before. He's added the distance that we know with his speed training, but he's also very accurate off the tee. And with these wide fairways, they may seem that you can spray it, but you do really need to be on the right side of the fairway with these Donald Ross designs in order to approach these saucer-like greens from the right direction. So I've got confidence in Fitzpatrick in that regard. I do think it's an interesting spot to look to deploy him, especially with his ability over 200 yards on approach.
There you have it. Fitzpatrick endorsed. All right, David, you got two left. 7,800 per pick. How are you rounding out the squad?
Yeah, so I actually wanted to take Tommy Fleetwood with one of my last two picks. As I mentioned, the links-like nature of this course, I think, would really suit Tommy Fleetwood, who seems to be the kind of guy who just like kind of can keep the round going without doing anything spectacular. And I think that's going to be really important this week. So instead of taking that route, I'm going to take Corey Connors. I've been on the Corey Connors train for quite some time. Again, I'll reiterate what everyone seems to be missing, that he's added a heap of driving distance as well as still keeping his driving accuracy. After Xander Schauffele, who's the best in the world at 200, you've got Tony Finau. Finau can struggle on Bermuda greens. And then Corey Connors is third best in the world in terms of approach from 200 plus yards, as well as adding all the distance. And his around the green game has been absolutely firing of late as well. So I think he's great value down at 7,200. And you're getting a discount on ownership because you've got a chalky Benny Arn and Sung Jae-im there. And you've got Fagala above as well, taking a lot of ownership as well. So very happy to take him there. And then rounding it out with Max Homer, who we've started to see beginning to improve in these majors as of late. 35th at Valhalla, but before that, third at the Masters earlier this year, finally starting to contend in these major championships. He's got a good record at Eastlake, another Donald Ross design. He's finished fifth and ninth the last two starts there. He was 10th at the Open Championship at Royal Liverpool. So that's really promising in terms of those links-like connections. And his approach play at the Memorial was excellent. He was gaining 1.44 strokes per round on approach, which I think a lot of people have missed, is that he really looks to be rounding into the form at the moment. He was sixth in the field last week for strokes gained approach. So getting an ownership discount on him, he's only 9% because he got Fleetwood at 14, Cam Smith at 13 right around him. So I think he's an interesting pivot spot on a course that I really actually think should suit him.
Interesting. Max Homa, I wasn't thinking too much about, but looking at it, I think you made some really good points. I think Homa's coming into that form, and that's when you want to start playing, guys. Because if he starts playing really well again 3 or 4 weeks from now, his price is going to go up. Ownership's going to go up. Now's the time to capitalize on it. So I like the look of your squad there, David. Nice draft. Audience, you're on the clock with the last pick. We're going to need that final nomination in. 8,200 total to spend. While we wait, Spence, we'd love your take on both Connors and Homa this week.
I like the Homa call. You're going to get unique and different with it. I'm probably out on Corey Connors. I don't have a massive take one way or another with it. It's a cheap enough price where if you want to bet on the ball striking, I think that's fine. But you know, for a golfer, for me, that was outside of the top 40. A lot of that does come down to his lack of US Open success. And you know, it's not this venue every single year. So if you have a reason to believe that Pinehurst and the ability of what he's been producing recently will change that narrative around, that would boost them up a little bit inside of my model. But there are just so many golfers that are in this seven, you know, we'll call it like 7,500 and less range. And I think the one name, and this is, I don't think this is going to influence the draft at all right now. I think Sia was going to ask about Sam Burns. Do we want to give this a 2 second answer on Sam Burns? Like, do either one of you guys have a thought on him?
I'll be honest. I have now gone off the Sam Burns train. I just think the form has taken a turn where I don't think he's playing the golf he was earlier in the year. So I'm not playing him, but I would love your take.
I think he's interesting because of what we're going to get here. Well, I mean, I guess the ownership is trending upwards, which is an interesting answer. Like, that's not where he was when I ran it earlier today. I don't know. I know that Nick Sticks Picks thinks he's one of the best values on the board. My model would probably be somewhere more in the middle of where your answer is and where his answer is. But I don't necessarily have a take one way or another. I'll let David take it and close us out of that.
Yeah, I'm interested. I think Sam Burns is a really interesting question this week because it is hard to judge exactly how he's playing. The concern for me is he's just lost on approach at the Memorial. He really did everything kind of scrambling around the green in short game. In saying that, that could be a real strength at Pinehurst. We know that that's kind of the recipe. I would probably point to his ability at the Open. He's played it three times. He finished 76, 42nd, missed cut. The US Open record isn't great, and he's had one finish of ninth at Eastlake last year, but outside that, he was 24th and 18th in a field that's only got 30 players in it. So that would be my kind of contention with that. And just to respond very quickly to the Corey Connors comment that Spence made, I completely acknowledge the US Open record for Connors is abysmal, but my contention would be that this is actually different to every other US Open test that we've had in recent time. Like, you haven't got the long rough, you haven't necessarily got the long driving distance because these fairways are going to be so firm and fast, and I'm really leaning into that 200 plus approach metric in terms of Connors, as well as his ability to find fairways, as well as the growth and the driving distance. So I do think that this is a really different US Open to what we've seen previously. That would be the one thing I'd just say in response to that. C's clarified it was going to be Burns and Justin Thomas. I prefer Thomas to Burns this week.
I would second that. I prefer Thomas as well. It looks like the audience pick is in, and it's Tyrrell Hatton. I like Tyrrell Hatton this week. I think he should be a good course fit. You know, he kind of flopped at the last major, but I think that might be people look into that and they maybe forget that he's on live and they see that he didn't really play well the last major that he was in. But I'm willing to forgive that. I think he can bounce back and have a good result this week. At under 8K, you know he's got upside to get you a top 15, maybe even a top 10. How about you, David? Will you be playing Hatton this week?
I think Hatton's a really interesting name. As I've said throughout the show, if this is links-like in nature, he's a two-time winner at the Alfred Dunhill Links. He's got a very good record at the Open Championship as well, where he's finished top six on a number of occasions. And, if you can discount the fact that he finished 63rd at Valhalla, I think he's an intriguing name at 7,800. And lower owned than I thought he would be. I'm only getting 8% ownership. I think that's a combination of Hideki Matsuyama and Fagala taking a lot of ownership near him. But I do think he's got the upside to finish top 10 in a very tough test, is what we expect.
All right. How about you, Spence? Any interest in Tyrrell Hatton this week?
To me, he's boom or bust. If you want to take the chance on his upside, you could certainly do a lot worse than that. There's a couple names in that upper or mid $7,000 section that carry very similar viewpoints there. The one that nobody wants to have the discussion about would be Jordan Spieth. I kind of view both of those two options the same way, where when they pop in my model, they pop heavily, and when they miss the cut. But I'm fine with Hatton. I think he makes some sense.
All right. All right, with my last pick here, it's obvious who I'm taking. I'm going to take Rory. I think one thing that might be a little surprising with Rory, I'll be honest, there's some other, obviously, the guys that were taken earlier, I prefer, and Rory kind of fell to me here in the last round. But something that's interesting about Rory is every tournament he's teed it up in since May, he has not lost strokes in any category. He has gained strokes in every category since May. So Rory's playing solid golf all around, and you know Rory is capable of putting together a winning week. Is he capable of putting together a winning week in a major? I mean, we've seen it. It's been a long time. Is this the week? To be determined, but I definitely think a top 10 or a top 5 is a result that you can get from Rory, especially now he's turned a corner. He's playing some really good golf. So I'll reiterate, there are some other guys that were taken in the first two rounds that I would prefer, but I'm totally happy with Rory falling to me here in the last round. Spence, you got one left, $6,500 to spend. Any interest in Rory this week and how you rounded out your squad?
I like Rory. To me, like, Rory and Xander are the two guys to kind of try to attack against Scotty in different builds. I don't know if this means anything. Did you guys see that Rory's getting back with his wife now? I don't know if that changes anything here, but definitely an interesting viewpoint of I don't know what is going on in his life right now. I am very conflicted of how I want to actually wrap up this build right now. It's one of two players. It's either Akshay or it's Davis Thompson. I worry a little bit that Akshay has better upside numbers, has a better overall rank, is even a little bit better from the safety in my model. Akshay's been very boom or bust recently with a lot of his results that he's put together since his victory. And I guess my biggest concern would come down to the recent around the green data. Like, he has just been pretty negative across the board. And this is not necessarily one of those venues that you want to be heading to, in that where if you look at Davis Thompson, he has been much flatter, at least as of the last couple events. This goes against my model. Maybe I lose some of the upside. I'll take Davis Thompson here.
Wow, there you have it. Davis Thompson, value to round out the squad. David, any interest from you in Davis Thompson this week?
I really like Davis Thompson this week. Not just from his ability on approach and with driver in hand, but the fact that you're getting him at no ownership. He's 1.7% owned according to the Data Golf in terms of projections for ownership, which is just minuscule compared to, like, you've got Bezuidenhout at 15% in that range. And I just really like what we've seen of him lately. The approach play has been really quite excellent. It's obviously a big step up in terms of the test, but he's 6,100. Like, what do you need from him? Like, if he finishes top 30, you've already returned value on that. And I think he's an interesting way to combine with Scotty Scheffler versus a lot of builds. Like, absolutely under no circumstances put Scotty Scheffler and Christian Bezuidenhout within the same lineup. Like, there's just the way to build an absolute chalk monster. I think Davis Thompson's a really interesting pivot in that range. I think it's a savvy way for Spence to round out his lineup here.
There you have it. All right. That's a wrap for the draft tonight. Let us know which team you like the most. Vote on it. We will crown a winner next week. Can Spence get the four-peat? To be determined? But we're not done yet. Hit the like button. Give us a follow. It goes a long way. Before we get you out of here tonight, we will be giving you our first round leader plays. But don't forget to sign up for Win Daily. As you sign up for Win Daily, we will be posting in Discord weather updates, so you'll know if there's any changes or weather edge as TF before Thursday morning. We will be posting them, so you'll see it. You'll get outright bets. If you're any outrights that you're looking for, get what the team's plays are. You also get our ownership article from Steven that comes out. It's one of the most accurate ownership articles in the business. Help you understand what ownership looks like before TF, especially for if you're playing in those big GPPs. Tune in next week. Again, like I said, we'll crown the winner and we will do it all again. But before we let you go, let's get into these first round leader plays. And we'll start with you, David. Who are you targeting this week in the first round leader market?
Yeah, so I've taken six names this week. I actually really wanted to include Davis Thompson within my first round leaders. And for me, it was just the fact that he's been cut from 300 in the outright win market to just 150. In the first round leader market, that kind of put me off him, but I've taken six instead, and the wind looks to be calmest in the morning, but more than anything, I just expect this track to get absolutely burnt out and crispy throughout the day, And so I really do think that the morning is the way to take this first round leader market on. We also know with these Bermuda greens, it can get pretty bumpy as the day goes on. So if it's going to be a tricky test as is, the last thing I want is a really firm, fast course and guys going out to try and get a first round leader. So the six names that I have this week, I'm backing up Huseyatou, Colin Morikawa, get him at 25-1. These are all with Unibet, where you can get seven places at 150 odds as well, by the way. Colin Morikawa, obviously last week at the Memorial, played really well, but he was also third for the first round leader. Same with Ludvig, who makes my first round leader card. He was third after the first round. You get him at 33-1. And then in longer shots, I've got Minwoo Lee at 66-1, Dean Burmester at 90-1, Ryan Fox at 100-1. And a golfer that's, I think, got the potential to go out and perform really well, Tom McKibben from the DP World Tour. Get him 125-1 for a first round leader. Goes off very first group of the morning, so he's going to benefit from really nice, calm conditions first thing, quiet golf course all to himself. He's performed really well at a very difficult long course called Green Eagle over on the DP World Tour, where he won last year. But from the same village or town in Ireland as Rory McIlroy, Hollywood, very long off the tee, but he's playing good golf. He's just taken a run of 7, 23rd, and 8th on the DP World Tour, and included in that was, an 8th at a very, very tough test as well. So do really like him there at 125-1, especially with seven places.
All right, there you have it. Spence, how about you? Who are you looking at in the first round leader market this week?
I'm going to answer Darren's question very quickly about taking Bezuidenhout over Davis Thompson. With the specific build I have, I agree with David where I would have taken Davis Thompson. Now, where I would still be intrigued to take Bezuidenhout with a Scheffler build is if I find myself in a position where I'm leaving $1,000+ on the table and I'm using that safe salary as a way to get unique and different. I think that's one of those routes, if you get chalky in positions, that you're going to have to find a way to just believe that you're getting value there with Bezuidenhout and treating him as if he's, you know, a $7,300 golfer and kind of going in with that mentality when you're making your build. But I have five first round leader bets. It's a lot of corollaries with what David just talked about. I did take Davis Thompson at 150-1, Minwoo Lee 66, Ben On 70, Sungjae 70, and I found a 35-1 out there on Ludvig Åberg.
Boom. I love it. And you know what I love about our first round leader plays? We have a lot of overlap. So we like a lot of the same guys, which I think is a really good thing. To get you guys out tonight, I really like Xander Schauffele at 22-1. I'm also on Colin Morikawa at 28-1. I like Tommy Fleetwood at 45-1. And my pick of the week, my first round leader play, that is going to be crowned Thursday evening at 60-1, Sungjae Im. Surprised he wasn't drafted on the show. I think he's a really good value, this play. He's definitely playing much better right now. A lot of fun this week. We're going to have a fun tournament at Pinehurst. Good luck with your DraftKings lineup, with your bets. Let us know how your teams do. Let us know who you think is going to win. We're tracking it all. We're coming back next week. Will we be able to dethrone Spence? That is to be determined. I think that's everything. Did I forget anything tonight? Sports. Yeah.